Barbecue is a very serious subject here in the South, but its true history is not all that well known. Many barbecue cooks, original barbecue cooks, were enslaved African Americans in the run-up to the Civil War, and they were instrumental in creating the tastes and the methods that are still used today. Robert Moss is the contributing barbecue editor for Southern Living. He recently wrote about two of these cooks from Augusta for the website Barbecue Hub, and Robert joins us now by Skype. Hi, Robert.
Hi, how's it going?
First of all, I love that Southern Living has a barbecue editor. That's the best job ever.
it's not a bad gig. Yeah, you could do a lot worse than that.
How long have you been the barbecue editor?
I've been doing that for about 2 years now.
Okay, so also with us is culinary historian Michael Twitty. He's the author of the upcoming book, The Cooking Gene, and that's G-E-N-E. Hi, Michael.
Hi, good morning.
It's good to have you both with us. Robert, from the piece that you wrote for Barbecue Hub, it looks like you knew these cooks existed, even though you didn't know who they were. How did you know that? What told you that there were some unknown chefs out there?
Well, I wrote a book back in 2010 called Barbecue, the History of American Institution, that was really the first book that dug into barbecue history, you know, back before the 20th century, so back into the 19th century. And we knew that there were African-American cooks doing most of the work, you know, from as simple things as pictures. If you saw pictures from the 19th century, you would see that the guys actually working on the pit were clearly African-American men. There might be a white guy sitting in the front who was the person who got all the credit. But the actual cooks we knew were African Americans. But the hard part is that the names and the stories didn't make it into the documentary evidence, into the newspapers and things like that. So in writing that book, I wrote about some of the so-called barbecue men who were all white guys, but wasn't really able to piece in information about the cooks until just recently.
So I heard you agreeing, Michael, when he was talking about these photos. And yet, why then does the myth persist that barbecue originated, some people say, in Eastern Europe?
I think it's, well, here's the deal. You have, for example, in Texas, where you have a lot of German and Czech influence, you know, folks down there have combined. Our barbecue is always political, like all food is political. And folks have combined sort of like ethnic pride with, you know, for lack of a better term, Eurocentrism and white supremacy. So a lot of things that originated in this Creolized mixture, I think Robert would agree that Europeans, Native Americans, and Africans all had their version of roasting meat. Africans and Native Americans particularly had the wood framework and food being roasted in a hole, which is, you know, traditional barbecue as it was in the 19th century, particularly in the hands of African Americans. And Europeans had their own methods of roasting meats. So you can see how all these things came together in different parts of the South depending upon what ethnic mixture was around. But unfortunately, you know, you have certain figures, and I won't name names, in South Carolina and Texas who have basically, you know, taken African-American folk out of the picture historically, when actually it was all of these groups and all of their cultural elements that contributed. I might quickly say that, you know, for example, a lot of people talk about the Caribbean. Well, who was in the Caribbean in 1502, the first arrival of African, enslaved Africans? And this was the part of Native America that was obliterated the most, you know, in the onslaught of disease. So, I shudder when people say, oh, just the Caribbean. No, it was this influx of people. I get in trouble in The Guardian saying that barbecue is freedom food. It's the freedom food of Maroons and rebel Native Americans who were fighting colonialism and slavery. And people didn't like that, even though we do associate barbecue with Independence Day and with Memorial Day and all these other freedom, you know, themed festivals.
So, Robert, let's talk a little bit about these two men that you found. And I want to start with Pick Wells, because, wow, what a colorful life he had. Pick Wells cooked for the president, and it looks like reports said he died while he was cooking barbecue.
Yeah, that's apparently dropped dead next to the barbecue pit, which I suppose is probably somewhat fitting for someone who made his reputation.
Well, he didn't fall in the pit.
That's right. Yeah. So tell me about him and how you found records of him.
Well, And actually, the interesting thing is sometimes all you really need is a name. And in this case, I'm indebted to David Shields, who's a professor at University of South Carolina, who turned up the names of both Pick Wells and Gus Ferguson in research for a forthcoming book that he's working on. David's been writing about what he's calling the culinarians, which are the sort of lost lost generation of great cooks in the South, most of whom were African American. And he turned up these two gentlemen in his research. They weren't able to make it into his book, but just having the names alone, I was able to then go dig back into the census records and basically piece together, something resembling their life stories, which is for me is something I wasn't able to do prior to this, because the names simply had been lost to history.
And was his, his story typical of some of these African American cooks at that time?
Well, it's hard to know for sure, because I mean, literally, we are just now starting to uncover these stories. But yes, I think it was. I think that it's a case of someone who didn't, this is in the Jim Crow South. Yeah. Who didn't have a lot of other options, but clearly a person of talent and energy who found a way that he could make a reputation and name for himself, in this case, cooking barbecue.
So then let me take that to you, Michael, because it appears that a number of African-American cooks were never named. Some of the storyline of it not being part of Black tradition came because when there were newspaper reports or invitations, they talked about the white men, mm-hmm. As being the caterers or the managers. Mm-hmm. Why?
Because African American folk, prior to the end of the Civil War, were property. I mean, on occasion, we know, for example, that through runaway ads, freedom seekers, we don't call them runaways, call them freedom seekers, were, listed by name as cooks, and they were talked about as, so-and-so is a great cook, I need him back in a hurry. Reward. Or sale ads, Charleston, Richmond, Baltimore, New Orleans, cooks are named, they say things like a complete cook, a master at the fire, an expert pastry cook. So those are the only times we see names associated with cooks other than letters and maybe journals. And, on occasion, sometimes some of these, sides for these barbecues would have reference the enslaved person, but almost never. So we were considered the machinery. And unfortunately, in the politics of writing about barbecue, there was a book in 2013, was it, Robert? I think it was. And a fella wrote about enslaved folks in the South and basically used the same kind of terminology. He wanted to rescue barbecue from, he said that making reference to these enslaved cooks was basically, we had northern white people to blame, and then it was really the genius of these white caterer overseers and not the enslaved cooks that produced the barbecue. He basically said that we were just like any other kind of machinery that did a task.
So, Robert, do we have a clue, and we're going to talk about Augustus Ferguson next, but do we have a clue about how these men actually cooked? I mean, in other words, what their style of barbecue was?
Definitely do. The things we think of as barbecue styles today, the Texas style, the South Carolina style, it's very much a 20th century thing. That was really created by the rise of restaurants in the early 20th century. 19th century barbecues are pretty consistent. Every account you see, whether you're in Virginia, you're in Texas, these are big pits dug in the ground, wood burned down to coals, and then whole animals placed over the pits. And we think of beef as being Texas today, and pork being, a Carolina thing. But back then it was basically whatever you had on hand. And in terms of sauces, it was the meat would be basted with a sort of vinegary pepper sauce, but there it really wasn't served with a sauce. So I think we have a pretty good sense of how the meat was cooked. It was cooked on, open pits, mm-hmm. in the ground and basted. And, you know, that was a pretty consistent thing in the 19th century.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Southern Living Barbecue editor Robert Moss and culinary historian Michael Twitty. We're talking about some of the unknown barbecue masters. And Robert, how many are you still looking for?
Well, I'm looking for all of them, actually. Though, you know, I've really with Pickens Wells and Augustus Ferguson, those are the two, at least of the African American barbecue cooks I've been able to find the most information about. But we know there's hundreds, if not thousands, of others to be found. So we're still you know trying to find as many as we can.
And one of the things that you point out, Michael, when you're tracing the roots of barbecue, is that even the name has its roots in Africa. What do you mean?
So it's interesting that barbecue has a really weird etymology. You can go with barbacoa, which is, you know, Taino Arawak Carib from the Caribbean. You know, a Spanish corruption of an indigenous word meaning, you know, a framework of sticks you cook on. Or you can go with the, you know, the pseudo-French one, you know, from the head to the tail. Or you can go with babake. Now, babake is a Hausa term, and it's from northern Nigeria. And the Hausa were enslaved across the entire period of the transatlantic slave trade. They were traders. And because they were traders, their words, their language enters into the language of many other West African peoples, despite the fact they have different language groups, et cetera. So babake literally means to build an incredibly big fire in order to cook. It means to singe. You change the tones. It's a tonal language. You change the tone. It means to singe the feathers off a fowl. It means to use up a lot of wood extravagantly in your cooking. Well, what would you use that for? It also means to roast, to grill, or to toast, and reference being a whole animal. So how interesting is that? And all the connotations of Southern barbecue are there. And, you know, we talk about the hot peppers and the vinegar. Well, in West Africa and most tropical places, why would you put hot peppers in your food? Is it just because you like spices or the explanation we always hear is, well, if you sweat, you get cooler. Part of it's because of, you know, parasites. They keep down parasites in your body.
Right.
So it's medicinal as well as seasoning as well as, you know, whatever cooling effect. I've never felt it. supposed to be afraid from sweating. But the vinegar as well. I mean, the vinegar and the pepper, if you can imagine animals that are in tropical regions where spoilage is almost immediate.
Yeah.
Those two things paired together work very nicely to sort of temper any sort of parasites or pests that may make spoil your food.
So, Robert, let's go then to Augustus Ferguson, who it appears immediately left his service at a white man's house and became a cook. Was that typical, that they would actually be able to make a living cooking barbecue?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I don't know that we have enough information to say for sure, though there's certainly
we don't actually know what is typical and what isn't.
Yeah, that's true. We're still figuring it out, though it's consistent with patterns that, you know, as we start to dig into sort of the history of cooks in the South, that you see you know, where domestic service, you know, working for a white family was often, you know, the only way to you know, to make a living for a lot of folks in the South. But there's a consistent pattern of people doing that for a long while, and then when they're able to, going lighting out on their own. In the barbecue history there's a great WPA, Works Progress Administration, interview from the 1930s with the owners of a barbecue restaurant in Athens, Georgia, who started out doing exactly that, working as cooks and maids, you know, for white families in Atlanta. And then when they were able to, they opened up their own restaurant, because it's a you know, it was one of the early ways that you know, in the Jim Crow South, African Americans could actually achieve some level of independence and working for themselves. And so I think you see that with Gus Ferguson. He worked with, you know, basically being the cook for Charlie Bowler, the great white caterer around Augusta, achieved his own reputation. And then he started working as a cook at Jansen's Restaurant in Augusta and still cooking barbecues. And then at some point, ended up moving to New Jersey. And the record, I couldn't find too much about his life in Red Bank, New Jersey, but he did move up there with his entire family. He owned his own house and he worked as a cook at a local restaurant. So I think it's sort of this progression toward independence, which you see consistently through those those few figures that we're able to find for the 19th and early 20th century.
So we only have a minute left, and I hate to do this to you, Robert, but what's the need to trace these men's life? Why do we need to know this?
I think it's when I think of history, I just really want to know what really happened. I don't want to create some mythic view of the past and try to make ourselves feel good. I think it's really just trying to as much as we're able to understand, here's how things really worked in the past, and here's really the way the barbecue tradition evolved. I don't think it does any of us any favors to sort of try to make up something that sounds good. I think it's much better to dig back into the past and use the facts to figure out how it actually happened.
That is Southern Living barbecue editor Robert Moss. Also, we spoke with culinary historian Michael Twitty. Michael's author, also author of the upcoming book, The Cooking Gene. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.